Just when you thought it was safe to take down your jack-o'-lantern, the spooky season returns. But not just any spookum, a genre-defining one. Because two horror fans, and the occasional special guest, refuse to let evil die tonight. Welcome to the Apocalypse Video Halloween Retrospective. I am your slightly less creepy narrator, David Snyder. Michael lives, but this time, they're ready. Prepare yourself for the lowest grossing sequel yet. It's Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers.
We both know he's alive.
But you know where he is.
Halloween 5. This time, they're ready. This time, he's unmasked. And this time, he's back with a vengeance. Halloween 5. The Revenge of Michael Myers.
Hello and welcome back to another terrifying installment of Apocalypse Video's Halloween Retrospective. Sheriff, evil is back and he's willing to do anything to get that girl. I'm your host Dave and I might be even crazier than Michael. I'm joined again by my even crazier ghost co-host, Nicholas Martinoff.
And you will definitely think I'm crazier after my take on this movie.
I really wish that, like, honestly, so we've watched all of these, so far we've watched these first five movies together, and after this viewing experience with part five, I kind of wish that we went into separate, like, isolation booths to watch these movies, so that we could therefore keep our opinions on the movies separate and until the day of the recording, and I'll tell you why. I was so sure that you were going to think this movie was at best mediocre, but it turns out you had a different opinion on this movie, Nick.
I pulled a thunderball on you.
I mean, Halloween, going into, I can't remember, did I, I think on the last episode, I said something, like, to the effect of, like, it kind of goes, like, after part four.
Yeah, basically, you were saying that every consecutive movie is pretty much as bad or worse.
Yeah, and so, what were your thoughts going into part five?
Well, like I told you before, I haven't seen any of these other Halloween movies anymore. So we're in the territory where I have not seen any of these movies. And I know basically next to nothing, aside from maybe like the posters or the titles. And that's about it, I think. So I don't really have any expectations about where the story is going or who's going to pop up or what's going to happen or anything like that. So yeah, I have no real expectations except that I should probably not expect a whole lot of maybe quality.
And what did you get with Halloween 5, Nick?
Well, I think we got a reinterpretation of the tale of Moby Dick.
Okay, now I'm kind of fascinated because you didn't drop the Moby Dick line.
I think this I think this is Loomis's story. There's something that this movie does, and I will come out right out of the gate and say I don't necessarily think this was intentional, like by design. But I think that this movie does enough to like bolster Loomis's descent or ascent into insanity, where this is his basically like Moby Dick story. Like, he is Ahab now, and he is like obsessed, and his obsession has reached like the breaking point where he's kind of like, where the way he is accosting Jamie, this 9-year-old girl, multiple times, and then
I know you know what she is.
Tell Jamie, me what
just
you know.
Tell me.
And I think, and I have like, I think this movie, I'm running with this because Loomis's very first appearance is like a quasi jump scare where it's just like, no. He just bursts in like an operation room.
You sense something, don't you? Tell me. Tell me what you know. Here, write. Write what you know. Jamie, please.
It's like he's there, like, so Jamie, if I remember right, Jamie has like a nightmare, right, or something.
She's having like a seizure or something like that, where she's having some, yeah, it's like she's been having nightmares and reactions like this, and they need to and this doctor thinks he needs to operate on her.
Yeah, and so because Loomis knows everything, he busts in, as you said, in a jump scare manner, and basically proceeds to, like, he wants to do, it's that moment from Airplane where, like, Leslie Nielsen, like, shakes that hysterical woman and slaps her. It's essentially that. He wants to be like, Jamie! He's, like, shaking her, tell me when Michael is! Like, and you can tell he wants to slap her so bad.
So,
you know, just, tell me where the evil is!
Okay, so Dave, you and I, you know, we watched this together, right? So while you were taking care of business, before we recorded,
what does that mean?
Well, I mean, we both know. So, but while you were taking care of business, I snuck in a rewatch of Five. So to just be absolutely sure of what I'm gonna be.
So while I was in the shitter, essentially, aka,
yeah, I stuck in another rewatch, which says more probably about your trips to the bathroom than me. But yeah, so I think this movie has. After my second watch, what stood out to me was, I think, the intentionality of like the cheese and. The overacting, I think, and
from Loomis specifically,
from Loomis, and I think the teens too, actually, especially in the barn scene. I think there's a cross into a self-awareness that becomes a little bit smarter, in my opinion. And it just seems, I don't know, it just seems like the ingredients are cooking correctly here for me. And which is funny because I like, it's not even just you or our friends, or like, everybody hates this movie. So I'm ready.
I can agree with that point insofar as Loomis is concerned, Donald Pleasance. He is, like, you know, a professional actor. Maybe I can get on board with that point. I don't think that extends to the teens, though. And honestly, the teens, I think, are the worst part of this movie. Tina is, I think, one of the most unlikable protagonists. I'll say this. She is the most unlikable protagonist in this entire franchise. I will say that right now. This was, so just, I guess just to give my little background on this movie, and this kind, I guess this kind of falls in line with most everyone else's opinions on this movie. I think this is the worst Halloween movie.
Oh, wow.
I've thought that for a long time. Well, I guess if you discount the Rob Zombie movies, which we'll get to at a much later date, those are kind of separate. I guess I'm talking specifically like the original Halloween series. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like this is easily the worst one, and that's mainly attributed to Tina. She is so damn unlikable. I don't think personally that the teens being bad is on purpose. To me it kind of falls in line with a lot of these slasher movies from the era, unlikable characters that you want killed. And, you know, honestly, I don't know if I can actually give the benefit of the doubt to Loomis and that being intentional, because in the trivia, apparently Donald Pleasance.
Well, I think I would wager maybe Loomis is probably at this point in Donald Pleasance's life invading Donald Pleasance's conscious or subconscious.
Oh my god!
And possessing him, like he is being devoured by this role. It's clear
there's something possessing Donald Pleasance. I don't think it was the role. I think it was booze. Apparently, like there would be stories of Donald Pleasance just like in his trailer, just drinking copious amounts of like wine. So I don't know if he was enveloped in the movie as much as enveloped in a bottle of booze.
But is that
oh, that's him getting into character.
Does that discount his performance?
I mean, he is by far the most enjoyable part of this movie. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
I feel like he is so enveloped into his insanity in this role. Like, I can't. So, even already, like, my memory on Four is hazy because that's just a kind of like a very okay movie, you know. But
it wasn't no double quarter pounder with cheese.
Yeah. So this one is, I think, like, to me, Loomis has got like, it's almost like this is his, you know, culmination of insanity. And I just think that, especially towards the end when he is, you know, combating Michael in the showdown, I feel like, you know, his that's, I think it's such a cool arc for him, like, because I think his presence in this movie is even more than previous movies, is just overtaking everything. And it's about him now and his obsession. Like, I mean, I get that, like, I my first take was a really strong, like, oh, this is Loomis's movie, secret. But I'm not as committed to that anymore. But I do think that Loomis has such a large role where I love seeing him, like, so obsessed at this point. Like, before it's been kind of like humorously crazy, but now it's like interesting crazy.
I think it could have been that. I don't think they go hard enough with that angle. Like, I think that could have been a really interesting take on this movie. So one of the big things about this movie that I guess sets it apart from the others is that they kind of do a thing. So if anyone recalls from Halloween, the ending of Halloween 4, it ends with Jamie touching Michael, thereby, I guess, transferring his evil or something. She ends up killing her stepmom. And then this movie opens with her in like an asylum or something akin to that. And apparently she has some sort of telepathic tie with Michael, where like she can sense his presence or she can like see what he sees. They also introduce this curious little tattoo on Michael's wrist, which we will later find out is referred to as the Mark of Thorn. We'll get into this in the next movie. I hope you're excited, Nick. and so they do some things. There's also this character that comes in that has no name. He looks like a cowboy. He's dressed all in black. He has these little steel-tipped boots. And spoiler, he ends up releasing Michael from the clutches of the authorities at the end of this movie by busting him out of prison. Or pressing him out of jail. So there's some things that this movie does, but I think what could have made this movie really interesting is if they'd really pushed on the craziness of Loomis to the point where, you know, maybe he is let go by the cops. Like, maybe he, like, the cops tell him, like, you need to get out of town. You are a crazy man. Say again?
So he goes rogue?
Yes. Like, I think it would have been more interesting because... Because, like, the end of this movie is a little insane. Like, they want to use the girl as bait, and Loomis, like, goes as far as, like, grabbing the girl at the end and, like, pulling her in. Like, she's right here, Michael. I got her for you. I'm serving her to you on a plate. You know, and then he, like, he drops a net on Michael, which is so hilarious to see.
It's a net of chains, Dave.
It's a net of chains, and he begins to beat him with a 2x4.
Well, first, which is one of the greatest. He shoots him with the tranquilizer, like,
oh, that's right,
times to, and I, yeah, and then he gets like a 2x4 and just starts beating, wailing
on Michael, which is one of the funner parts of the movie. But like, I feel like that would have been a lot funner if that had been a result of Loomis staging all this on his own without the approval of the authorities. Like, it would have been so much funner, like, if we get into him being even crazier and acting outside of the authorities and setting this whole thing up on his own, you know, and like kidnapping the girl and taking her, and then you could have been like, oh my god, Loomis has finally gone officially crazy. He's like, is he willing to kill this girl? You know, that would have been fun. That would have been a fun lair that this movie could have had, but it just doesn't. And instead, it's replaced with Tina, and she is the worst. I'm sorry.
Tina, queen of room service.
Well, first, okay, so there's two about like what you're saying about things that this movie could have done to be better. There's a lot that this movie could have done to be better, for sure. Because I don't think this movie is like anywhere near great or anything like that. But it's, I think this movie is definitely more, to me, more interesting and fun because it's interesting. But secondly, I want to know, like, okay, so you don't like Tina. I get it. But why don't you like Tina? Like, what is separating Tina from all these other, like,
she is very irritating, and maybe it's the actress. I'm not sure. But it's certainly the script isn't doing their character any favors. I just find her super annoying. And just, like, her whole thing is, like, I just want to party. You know what I mean? And again, that's not necessarily different from a lot of other similar characters in other horror movies, but she is, like, just, I don't know. I find her very annoying. Like, more so than a lot of similar characters in other movies. And again, it might just be the performance. I don't know.
Nothing, Mike. That's what I get. Nothing. Stop here. I want to pack a cigarette. I said stop the goddamn car. I want to pack a cigarette. Psycho boyfriend.
It's funny because I was thinking, I don't think of her as exceptionally worse than other teens. She's not like, you know, one top tier or anything like that. But I mean, she just seemed pretty much on par. And so it's like, and when I was talking earlier about the teens kind of acting in a way that seems more self-aware, I think it was a funny choice to make the teens do the prank with the Michael Myers mask. I thought it was funnier this time because if you remember, or if I remember correctly, in the previous one that they did that, it was just these random teens that were like pranking people or the town or something like that. But this
and time, also 10 years had passed between the last Michael Myers incident.
Yeah. And so
this is 1 year later.
And so but the difference is that it's the teens that we like are kind of following, and they do us. It's not even just like they do a prank like murder scene. And then,
yeah, with the cops.
Yeah. With the cops. And then they do it again with just the girl and the guy. And I just think that the way that they kind of go about, I don't know if this is me just, you know, kind of being hyperbolic, but when they go into the barn, the guy, when he's like chasing the girl, he's like, ah, 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 ah. It's really funny, but it's, but it's just seems, I don't know. There's just, I have a benefit. I'm giving this movie the benefit of the doubt in this case for the barn scene, because I think, I will say the character I dislike the most in this movie is Tina's boyfriend. I don't even know if he has a name or not. But that guy,
it's Michael.
Yeah, that guy sucks. So,
hey, hands off the car.
Actually, you know, I was thinking this on my second watch. I was like, I think I know why they cast that guy, because he has a really good face when Michael chokes him out. And I could imagine them when they cast these kids, they're like, okay, show me your choke face. And they're like, okay, you got it. And this guy had a really great choke face. So I'm like, maybe they cast him because he had that. So,
oh my god, doesn't he also does he get impaled with something? I can't remember.
No, he gets the, it's like the garden prongs to the face. And yes. Yeah, so he gets choked out and then he gets those to the face.
That's like the one good kill in this movie. Like if I'm telling the knocks against this movie, I would say the kills are very lackluster, which are disappointing.
Well, that's another thing to me is that there's other things that this movie are doing that seem so dull or neutered or muted,
yeah.
Or restrained that I can't help but feel like Donald Pleasance's craziness that I feel is accentuated by the other stuff that's kind of duller.
Mm.
So like
it's
we don't
more
see,
noticeable.
Yeah, like so we don't so two noticeable kills that we don't get to see that are kind of frustrating in the moment are when Michael kills the girl with the scythe. We don't see
that is the biggest crime that this movie
It is a crime. I agree with you though. I do agree. It's
because
it
like
what
you both of us like especially again, I was sort of cuz I've seen this movie before. So and we were watching it together. So like out of the corner of my eye, I was kind of like gauging your responses and like you both of us like you got excited at the scythe.
Yeah.
Because a scythe is something you don't typically see used as a weapon in horror movies or ever scythe. Really.
Yeah.
And it's so perfect for Halloween, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the way he – and there's like a little build-up to it, you know? And the way he slashes it towards the screen, very effective, very cool. We just don't see the next part, which is like a head flying off or you know what I mean?
It's
like
a blood splatter.
Or even blood splatter. Like it is – I think honestly that's one of the biggest knocks against this movie because the – and even like on the Blu-ray, you see Michael with the scythe and you're like, oh, cool. That must be the signature like, you know, kill moment of this movie. It's like not at all.
Yeah.
And that is very disappointing.
Yeah, it's a big bummer. We feel robbed. I think that moment is a huge missed opportunity to show us something cool. And then also the
well, because the scythe is so gnarly looking.
Yeah,
you associate the scythe with death, and like Michael Myers is death, and then like it's such a cool visual, like it's such a cool looking weapon, and we don't get to see it.
Yeah, and like you said, it doesn't really pop up very often. I think I had mentioned it to you when we were recording before. There's that. I think the poster is probably more well known than the actual movie, but it's Fascination. I think director Jean Roland. But it's that girl with the scythe. And it's very memorable. So Scythe, I mean, huge fan. You know my favorite Pokemon is Scyther. But yeah, and then to not get anything, especially since they choose to use that image. I hate when they do that, you know, it's a fake out.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you're like, okay, finally a movie that could maybe a movie that could compete with the huge mass murder sequence in The Seventh Seal where Death uses a scythe and just wipes out a whole village. You remember that scene?
Oh yeah, in the director's cut. That was the
yeah the it's not seen, it's not talked about very much. But the
yeah,
because
you can't
cut of
you can only
Seal.
Get it on the Scream Factory version of Seventh Seal.
Exactly. It was a limited edition. They only made like 200 of them. That's why not a lot of people have seen it. And weirdly, it hasn't been uploaded to the internet, so don't even try to look for it.
Yeah, you have to come to Apocalypse.
Massive
video
murder
to
sequence,
see it.
Like very like ahead of its time, very gruesome. Like you would think Tom Savini worked on the kills, and the scythe is the main component. So it's like, yeah.
Yeah,
everyone's chasing that mysterious Seven Seal director's cut version.
Yeah, a lot of people always are talking about Bay of Blood and you know how it sets such a precedent, but it was really the Seventh Seal that was setting the precedent for all this gore and mayhem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's this? Bergman did it first.
I love how we're just keeping this misinformation train going. but your original point, I do agree with that. We are robbed of a really cool kill. I mean, they could have even done a basic kill with a scythe, and it would have been cool because it was with a scythe.
It could have been, yeah. It could have been like the most basic like throat slash thing, and that would have been fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's
but we
that's
don't see
the thing.
Anything.
The kills and honestly, just Michael in general is not a whole lot very memorable in this movie.
He has like a mullet in this movie.
Yeah, he looks like... his mask. Because there's a scene where Loomis is talking to Michael and saying like, you know, you can resolve your issues here or whatever, you know, and Michael looks like a nerd, man, with a.
Like, that wasn't my first thought, looks, but I just thought, like, why does his hair have, like, a mullet shape now?
Well, it's only this one scene just because he's kind of, like, looking down forlorn and he's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be so angry.
why am I so angry?
Why'd I kill those people? What was I thinking?
It's like, oh, like, I really should have showed the kill with that scythe earlier. That would have been a lot more cool.
Yeah. So, I don't know, but... Michael, even him, like, even there's a scene, I think you pointed out when we were watching it, when they're in the park and he's just kind of in the background behind some leaves and a tree. And he's just kind of like...
like a know, nerd, yeah.
Yeah, just hanging out like, oh, are they going to invite me to play or something like that?
And yes, it does have that vibe of like a nerd like wanting to join in on a party, but he's too nervous to ask.
Yes. It's
like, hey, can I kill you guys later?
Yeah. You think I could kill you?
And what's so funny about that moment, I remember that scene that you're talking about, I think like Tina is talking with her friends or something outside of, out, like you mentioned, a park or something, and you just see Michael in the background, and it was funny, I remember the way the scene is set up, it's so obvious that he's in the background, and you're like, clearly those characters could see him, right? He's right there, that I think you pointed out, like, oh, well, this has got to be like a fake-out scene, right? That's like their friend or something, and I'm like, no, that's actually Michael back there. You're like, really? Because the way it's shot is so poorly done.
It's really lame.
I know. Which, again, is what I could... is like my, it would be my thesis statement for this movie, Halloween 5. It's like, really lame.
But that... that scene is... Okay. I mean, it is goofy, and there's a lot of stuff that is not very good, but it's almost like... Like, that scene in particular at the park... feels like, so we also just watched New York Ninja, right? Like, that feels like that level, and it's just like, how could that be in this Halloween movie, like, unintentionally?
Wow. Like, okay, so you're simultaneously saying this is like sort of an interesting like take on the movie, but you're also comparing it to a movie called New York Ninja.
But you don't understand. I'm saying that there's, I'm giving the movie, I see enough of these things, are the stars are aligning for me on this movie, and I'm thinking that it's just coming together to be like a really interesting happy accident that, like, I'm not saying that it's like a you know, art piece or anything like that, but it has this moment, it's like, where it's almost intentionally like takes you out of the movie. It's like, oh, this is kind of lame, like, this is funny, you know, but
does that make it good though?
It makes it interesting to me, which is something I also really like.
Okay.
And so,
this would be one of those like 2-star movies where you would, in your review, you'd be like, but there's some things here.
Well, no, so I don't think the movie is consistently at that New York Ninja level, which is why it's not like on the bad side for me, like on that rating scale or whatever. So
I almost wish it was. That might make it more enjoyable.
Dude, I think one of the ending scenes where Michael is chasing Jamie with the car, I think that's cool.
Oh, that was, yeah, it was different, I suppose. Like, I like, but what's that. Funny about that scene is like, they're riding around in what, was it a cornfield or some kind of field, and like she just sort of like runs in circles, and eventually he like wraps the car around a tree and like disables himself, which was, that was kind of funny unintentionally. That Michael is just such a bad driver that he just rams right into this tree. And also there was something funny about that moment, like, he crashes the car, and this is actually kind of an effective moment. Like, you hear the horn blaring, so clearly Michael's head is, like, on the horn, he's knocked out, and the kids are like, oh, good, he's gonna die, like, the car's on fire, and, like, they're breathing a sigh of relief, it might all be over, and suddenly the blare of the horn stops, and you're like, oh, his head must have lifted off the, he's alive, and it's just this flat shot of the door opening, and Michael just kind of gets out, and he's like, hey. The way he was shot was so funny. He just sort of gets out. He's like, okay, I'm better now. I feel like that scene could have been shot in a more effective way. Like, they didn't need... I thought that was actually one effective moment where, like, the horn's blaring and suddenly it's not. But, like, the weird shot of him just, like, you see him in the car for a moment. Mm-hmm. And then he just kind of exits the car and just sort of stands there like, hey, I'm back. It's just like... I don't know. Like, I... This movie tries to do some interesting things, and I guess I'll give it credit for that. Yeah. Like, you can tell it tries to be, like, this movie's trying to be, like, the edgy one, like, with the opening. Like, you know what? We're going to bring back the whole opening bit in the opening credits with the pumpkin, but this time, we're not just going to zoom in on a pumpkin with a scary face. We're going to have awesome, intense slashes at the pumpkin, like, shoo, shoo, shoo. Like, you could, it's like this movie's trying to do things and it thinks that it's intense, but it's kind of lame.
Well, I agree with you in the sense that I don't think this movie achieves any success in like sustained tension or anything like that. So I don't think it's that, it doesn't succeed in that sense, but I do think that another thing that this movie does, which adds to the interest level to me, is that That's basically the child violence seems pretty heightened here.
That was surprising. Yeah.
And like, for example, the scene where Jamie is like trapped in that chimney shaft or whatever, that the trash chute or something like that. Like I was imagining like Jamie, that actress, her performance is like really intense. And I think that that scene is especially brutal because you kind of have this claustrophobic shot of her like trapped in the whatever it is, trash chute, and
that dumbwaiter,
and it's dusty, and I think that that's a pretty cool sequence right there. Although that it is goofy how she kind of jumps off the knife.
Yeah, she steps on the knife, it bends, yeah, and then she uses like a Super Mario like a stepping stone. Yeah. Yeah, that was goofy, but yeah, the conceit of that scene I think is fun, and to give one positive note to the Michael performance in this movie, his slashes feel like violent in that moment. In that scene, like when he's just like mercilessly stabbing the vent, he realizes like, wait a minute, why am I trying to like stick my knife up the vent? Like I know where she is in the vent. I could just stab the outside of it.
Yeah.
And like his violent slashes, like he's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like that was the one time that this Michael had any sort of life to him.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's why Jamie almost doesn't feel like a character in this movie. Actually, she feels like to me, she feels like a lightning rod or a tuning stick to like Michael, which I guess is kind of what the movie's trying to do. But I think that's why she is actually like kind of a vessel for all characters, because Michael's after her, Loomis is after her, and she's kind of just trying to escape. And she does have this little kid friend, I guess. But yeah, I think that Loomis also is like contributing to a assaultive in world for Jamie too. And I think that's interesting, the way they treat Jamie, like all the adults in the movie basically treat Jamie, I think, is kind of like another unintentional, like interesting thing. Like they're not really interested in her.
Well, you're kind of like talking, we're 30 minutes in and we haven't discussed the plot of this movie. We just started to jump right in. Like, Nick, since you're the world's biggest fan of Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers, why don't you give us a plot breakdown of Halloween 5?
So Halloween 5 opens up, if I remember correctly, a year after number 4.
Well, it does a little Bride of Frankenstein thing. Where what you didn't see.
Yeah, so, and this was another thing, actually. So, it shows you a continued ending of 4, right? So,
yeah.
We see him get shot, and then, I don't remember if we see this part in 4, but, like, he's down a hole, and they can't locate him or whatever, so they drop a bundle of dynamite down there. And then, but we see him crawl and escape out the end of the tunnel, and he washes down the river and he survives
in something literally ripped from Bride of Frankenstein. It's the same thing where there's like a shaft down there, he falls down, he manages to escape into like this underground river or something like that. And he ends up just like he ends up like going down the river and he befriends this old man character,
yeah,
this
exactly. Hermit. Yeah, so same exact thing. And and then a year passes, right, to the eve of Halloween. And he wakes up and he kills the caretaker and goes off. And then Jamie simultaneously reacts because she's, I think Michael or Dave said earlier in the episode, she's in like this nursing home or something like that, where she's being monitored and cared for. And
she's now mute.
Yeah, she can't speak, which she's, I thought was a cool scene because she starts screaming or silently screaming in when she reacts to Michael. So they have like a psychic link somehow. And so they're reacting, and sure enough, she's reacting so strong they think they need to operate on her. And this is when Loomis appears, just very first scene. He's in the operating room. This doctor's about to stab her trachea. He's like, no! And then kind of the quest for Michael begins. And so then the movie kind of moves back towards Michael is kind of haunting the town, but there's no one really knows for sure he's there.
Everyone's just out celebrating Halloween 1 year after the events that he killed a bunch of people. And well, that's a big talking point we'll get into. I'm sorry, continue. I'm sorry. That whole idea is just so insane to me.
Well, I do want to talk about it as well, because I noticed something in this second rewatch. Anyways, there's a group of teens. We're going to follow them. They're just about partying, you know. So, and that's not... the teens don't really have a meaningful arc at all. They're just there to... Like, they're... I guess Tina, the one that Dave hates, she is like has a relationship with Jamie, but she doesn't even she just wants to party too. So, but yeah,
that's Michael, her whole character. She loves to party.
Yeah, and so the movie is basically Michael is about to strike. Jamie reacts. Loomis interprets Jamie, and then they chase him, and then Michael gets away, and they repeat that, you know, two or three times. and then they go to this party environment, you know, and Michael shows up in a barn where the kids are having sex, and he, you know, takes them out, and violence ensues. And then this is when, you know, Loomis kind of starts to set a trap for Michael, using Jamie as bait, essentially. And the climax, you know, kind of happens as you said already, Dave, where, you know, he traps him with a giant net.
Sheriff, I have finally discovered Michael's weakness. Steel nets.
Those are
I don't know why I didn't man. Think of it before. And 2x4s, Sheriff. Sheriff, you must issue 2x4s to all of your men. It is his only weakness. May I suggest putting a nail in some of them? It'll make it more effective.
That's a Simpson joke, if you didn't know.
And that's basically, well, one thing we left out, I mentioned earlier, while all this is happening, a bus comes into town, and off steps a cowboy. A man in black, in a black trench coat, black cowboy hat, black cowboy boots with steel tips, and you're like, what is this? Like, we see scattered scenes through him throughout the movie of, it seems like he's setting something up. Like, at one point in Michael's house, you see, like, the man in black's, like, coat, I think, or something, like, in the background. So you're like, something is afoot. I don't know what this guy's deal is, but he doesn't seem good. And, yeah, in the end of the movie, basically, Loomis's genius idea with the net and the 2x4 works. They capture Michael. Actually, like, I hate this movie, but there is a funny scene that I do enjoy from this movie. It's like, well, it's not a scene. It's like a brief little shot of, like, of you just see Michael, like, he's got his hands, like, in his lap, and he's sort of hunched over, and he's sitting down in, like, a jail cell. And it almost looks like he's almost, like, rocking a little bit. Like, he's biding his time. Like, he's got these chains around him, and you just see him in the cell, and he looks like... what would I describe it? He just looks like he's biding his time. He's just like, these sons of bitches, like, I'll get him out. It almost like, I can almost hear his inner monologue, like, I'll escape again, Dr. Loomis. You know what I mean? Like a Batman character.
I'll get you yet.
I'll get Dr. you yet, Loomis. Dr. Loomis. My pretty. But then the man in black comes, breaks him out, kills a bunch of people with a machine gun, which I thought was a nice, fun change for Halloween. And the movie ends. You're like, oh my god, what a cliffhanger!
Yeah, but you're totally misreading this ending, David.
Okay,
it's not the whole point. Isn't the breakout? It's because the end scene is Jamie realizing that Michael is free again, and that the world she is destined to live in is a life of prey.
I think you're assigning way too much importance to this movie.
I think you're just not, opening your mind to and being receptive to, you know, the brilliance of the modern or the 89 auteur Dominique Othenin.
Oh my god. Okay, so tell me the significance of the cowboy. Explain the cowboy to me, Nick. Exactly, you can't.
Well, the significant. Okay, so this is. I thought that what was
the cowboy is like the devil because Michael is one with the devil. You see, well, and they're like best buds.
The only thing it really has that character really has going for it in the movie itself is that he does look like a cowboy with the boots or anything, but he also has from The Exorcist. He has that kind of vibe.
There was almost that. Well, that there was
didn't
a moment
I say
where
that aloud when he
yes
shows
he steps off the bus and you were like, are they trying to recreate like that poster shot from The Exorcist? Because didn't he have like a briefcase or something?
Yeah. So that's what I was thinking. But so here's the thing I noticed, and I know you wanted to talk about this, probably a good segue, but I didn't notice it. I didn't connect these in the first watch, but the second watch. So in the first scenes of Michael, you know, under that guy's care, we see his wrist and he has a tattoo of some symbol. Like, it looks like a rune.
It's a pagan symbol.
Yeah. So, and then it shows up on that guy's wrist too, the stranger's wrist.
Oh, it did.
Yeah. So I noticed it a second time.
Oh, wait, you mean the cowboy?
Yeah.
The cowboy. Oh, I thought you meant, okay. I thought you meant the hermit that's taking care
of him. No. Just the Michael's wrist.
Well, do you want to hear something funny about that hermit?
Okay.
So alternately, they shot a sequence that was ultimately cut from the movie where that hermit actually uses dark magic to resuscitate Michael. Crickets. Yes, there is a sequence you can find. I'm sure you can see it on YouTube where this guy uses like dark magic or something to basically, I don't know if bring Michael back to life or just resuscitate him. But It was cut from the movie with good reason. Well, I don't know. Like, again, like, this movie doesn't have that much going for it. So it's like, go crazy. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? It's like, screw it. Go crazy. Put all the crazy shit you want. Sure, this hermit guy knows dark magic and, like, resuscitates his evil being. Why not?
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, that wouldn't, I don't know. That wouldn't be out of the norm.
This guy that just lives a little bit off the river from Henfield just happens to practice dark magic. That's fine. Let's spice things up a bit. But I think one of the big talking points that I wrote down about this movie that just blew my mind, we kind of talked about it a little bit in Halloween 4, the crazy idea that Haddonfield would still celebrate Halloween, or at the very least, sell the Michael Myers mask. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like a thing, like, you would think they wouldn't sell it. Like, if you wanted to buy the Michael Myers mask, you'd have to go out of town in order to purchase it. You know what I mean? You wouldn't think they would be selling this in town. Like, not like Halloween 4, it almost makes me think, like, okay, so are they following like a 10 years rule? Like, you know, if they started selling the mask 9 years later after the events of the first movie, would it be like, hey, too soon? You know, too soon. But once they hit the 10 year mark, they're like, okay, it's fine. You can start selling the mask. But you would think that they would stop, you know, after the events of the fourth movie, that they would stop selling that mask, at least in the in the town of Haddonfield.
Well, okay, so this time I was thinking a lot about, or on the second watch, I was thinking a lot about things like that. Like, okay, how do these stories make sense? Or, like, logically, does it make sense that a kid would act this way or whatever? There's a couple of different things, like maybe they had the mask from last year, you know, because if that, like,
or maybe there is a run. Maybe people are like, oh shit, like there's been another batch of killings. Like, we should buy up all the Michael Myers masks because they're going to stop selling them in town pretty soon.
Yeah, it's all supply chain issues.
Yeah, we're going to have to drive all the way to Ohio to get a Michael Myers mask.
But I was thinking, because you've mentioned this in both in 4 and 5, how it seems like Haddonfield, like, doesn't really take it seriously, but. And I think you're right when you say that in the scenes that you're talking about, you're right. But they also do make an effort to show the opposite as well, which I think is, like, I think it's actually bad that they can't really make up their mind. But because if you remember in this scene, there's two or this movie, there's two scenes. One, a brick gets thrown through a window with a note that says the evil child must die. And I thought this was exceptionally, like, goofy because the font or whoever wrote, whoever handwriting this is, it looks like a cartoon or something.
They use Comic Sans.
It's in this bright purple or something. It's a very strange, it almost looks fake.
Man, all they had with color markers at the ironically titled Michael's store was purple. Okay, I would have chosen a different color, but it's all they had in stock. Okay, supply chain issues are hitting Haddonfield hard.
The Michael Myers incident is disrupting the supply chains of Haddonfield.
And it's not just the Michael Myers mask.
So they have that moment, and then there's also a line. It's obviously throwaway, but I heard it this time when Tina is talking to her blonde friend, not Rachel, the other girl. She has a line where she says Halloween should be illegal in this town, and so I was like, oh, that's interesting. You know, they do things that say, like, try to show that the town remembers, but then they also do other things that say like the town doesn't care. So I don't know. I mean,
they even celebrate it at like the asylum. They have like a costume Halloween party. It's like, really? Like, would Jamie still be celebrating Halloween?
Yeah,
I think
true.
Not. Or like, would they be forcing it upon her? Either one doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And she's like excited about it too. She's like, ooh, look at my new costume. Like, it is a scant 1 year later. Like, you should not, like, the very mention of Halloween should like throw you into bits of silent screaming.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that whatever mental health facilities and operations they have in place in Haddonfield up to this point in time are maybe not, you know, the best, and they're not, you know, taking the best care of their patients. Because I think at this point, it's like we have strong evidence that Haddonfield has a systemic issue here.
Well, speaking of issues that Haddonfield has, they also seem to have an issue with their police department, mainly that they employ Keystone cops. Can we talk about the cops for a second?
There's
the
bumbling duo. No explanation for their introduction. I do not understand. Like, it's just, it's from a different movie.
All right, Chad, could you please play me the introductory scene of the two goofy comedy cops, please?
All clear.
Nothing above, nothing below.
What about Max?
Adobe, right?
This is not happening to me. Max! Max, what have you done? I'm so embarrassed.
It's what we're here for.
Rescue cats.
Find dogs.
That's a job.
And we love it.
Again, like a... They get a goofy theme moment, like doo-doo-doo-dee-dee,
yeah.
Bwonk.
I mean, okay, you know I love Power Rangers. These guys are like Bulk and Skull.
Yes, they are. Oh, my God. That is the perfect comparison. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's like...
It's so goofy and out of nowhere, and it comes up twice, I think. Like, when the teens are pulling the prank, you see them in the car.
Ham, but they continue to be goofballs, like, throughout the movie.
No respect for authority these days. Kids these days celebrating Halloween a year after a mass murderer. This is crazy town. I don't know. This Damien character he's no Damien Chazelle. I'll tell you that. If Damien Chazelle had directed this movie, at least maybe we would have got a fun like dance sequence with the Man in Black and Michael and Loomis. That could have been fun. But no, this movie just gives us don't bonk.
What Damien are you talking about?
Damien Chazelle, the director of La La
Land. I know, but
Land.
why is he? But is there another Damien?
The director of this movie, Damien something. I don't remember
Dominique.
His last name. Oh, it's Dominique.
Yeah.
Well, Damien Chazelle would have made a better movie than this guy. We could have had a fun Bollywood-esque dance sequence in the middle of the movie.
You just want cow elephant shit in your Halloween.
And you know what? There could have been like some sort of like fun, you know, horse shit moment in the barn if Damien Chazelle directed this.
Yeah, you're totally right.
That was a Babylon reference, by the way, for the 12 people who saw that movie, but. Six of them being us, but in our group. Anyway, I'm sorry. Continue. Well, you were talking about elf and shit.
Well, yeah. Well, I said that you would love this movie.
AKA Halloween 5. Oh, can I get a rim shot, please, Chad? Thank you.
So tell me about this symbol, because you had mentioned it before. Didn't you say it had a name?
We find out the name in the next movie. It's referred to as the Mark of Thorn. It's a pagan symbol. And this would not be our first introduction to pagan imagery and ideas. If you recall, Halloween 3 was all about, like, you know, pagan stuff.
Well,
maybe
I mean,
they're bringing it back?
It was introduced with Samhain, right?
What am I talking about? Of course, Samhain, or as Loomis incorrectly says,
Samhain.
No shit, if the correct pronunciation is Samhain. I've done my own alternate research on it. Alternate facts. But yes, this will come more into play in the sixth movie, as does The Man in Black. The Man in Black does return. But I think the problem is, like, when this came out, but there are 6 years between Halloween 5 and Halloween 6. And to be frank, to be honest, I'm surprised that they continued this whole storyline into Halloween 6 since so much time had passed between the two movies. I'm surprised they didn't just do a reboot. This will pay off eventually, but if we're just to take Halloween 5 on its own, and you've never seen Halloween 6, so you're the perfect candidate for to ask this question. Does the Man in Black stuff work for you? Does it set up like an intriguing mystery for you?
I mean, to that group answer, no. I mean, that's not something I would typically care about. I like the fact that I like the consequence of his break-in because it does end with Jamie. If it didn't end with Jamie, I would have hated it. But thankfully, it does end with Jamie. And it, again, she's faced with like this terror back in her just free, you know, to get her. So but as far as what the man does, I don't really have too much interest in that.
So it didn't move the needle one way or the other for you?
I mean, he didn't. It may be slightly, like, it's neutral to little positive, I guess. It's not like, oh my gosh, who is this guy? That's not who I'm.
It didn't engender, like, I gotta know more. Like, Dave, can we watch Halloween 6, like, right now? I gotta know.
Yeah, I really wanted to, but I knew you hated 5 so much, I just didn't want to, you know. Make you watch 6 right back to back.
Well, I mean, I don't really have too many other notes on this movie. Like, there are times when I was sort of like phasing out, like just sort of, you know what I mean? Because again, this movie, I find this movie kind of boring. The kills are unremarkable, but it does pep up when Loomis is on screen, especially at the end when he's whacking Michael with the 2x4 because he literally starts screaming, "Die! Die! Die!" Like, Loomis is like the shot of adrenaline that this movie gets whenever he's on screen. Like, it's absolutely crazy. It may just be Donald Pleasance is drunk on set. But whatever it is, it's fun to watch. Like, those are the moments of fun that this movie has.
I love that scene.
That are too far and in between.
Remember when they're in the police station and he, like, takes off his glove? Look at this. Look at this.
Look at my mangled body, Sheriff.
I was hoping he would burn in hell, but I knew hell would not have him.
You know, and I'm looking at my notes. You know, another thing that this movie does to try to, like, make... I feel like it's something that it does to make it seem, like, cooler than it really is or more intense or whatever. They kill off Rachel from the previous movie, the hero of the previous movie.
I figured they did that because she just didn't want to be in the
didn't want to come back for like the whole shoot. That could very well be possible. But to me, it almost seemed like they were trying to do maybe like a Psycho thing where it's like, oh, you think the hero of the movie, it's like, oh no, she's actually gonna die, like, you know, in the first act or whatever. But you know what, you might be onto something, that maybe she just didn't want to come back for a full movie. It's like, I'll give you 2, maybe 3 scenes. It'll be a shower scene, but you're not going to see me naked. You know, like, yeah. I'm not showing my boobs for Halloween 5. No way.
Yeah, there's no boobs in this one.
But like I said, oh, and I guess one other positive note for this movie that I do enjoy. I enjoy that he may not die, but I like that at the very least the movie has the teeth enough to at least, like, run the kid over with the car. I'm not referring to Jamie. I'm referring to her friend who stutters. Like, when they're being chased by Michael in the car, like, Michael does manage to, like, clip this kid, and the kid, like, flies. And I seem to remember your reaction was like, what? They did it! Like, again, like, that's one pause. And I'm sure people listening are like, I think this Dave character is more insane than Dr. Loomis himself. But no, like, again, it's like, with a movie like this, I'm, like, grasping at straws, trying to find things that are, like, somewhat memorable. And the fact that they have the guts to even clip this kid with the car, that's something.
So, that reminds me, one last thing I wanted to ask you about. There's a scene, so you mentioned the kid, her friend, Jamie's friend, who stutters in the movie. Mm-hmm. But there's a scene at the costume party where Jamie collapses and then she starts like kind of like trying to speak. And then the boy is translating.
Oh, God. Are you talking about the cookie lady bit?
Store.
Store. Kind of store. What do they sell there? What did they sell?
Big woman.
A big woman? Yeah. A big woman who works in the store.
No.
What? Jamie,
what? Cookie woman.
Cookie woman.
Dale's gas station, 5th and Main.
Does the boy understand her because she's kind of stuttering, or does the boy understand her because he has like some connection?
No, I think he was just trying to piece it together phonetically. I think cookie woman.
But why do they need the boy to do that?
They don't. He doesn't need to be there. That's the whole point.
Well, I'm sure they all realize
she's saying cookie.
I think maybe it's because he stutters that they were saying like.
Oh my god! You know, I think you're right though. The way the scene is shot, it does look like he's almost acting as her interpreter, which is just bonkers.
That's what I thought the second, and now I'm like, I don't know. So why do they have him doing that? It's just so weird. And then it was extra funny because I didn't catch this the first time, but it's like she starts saying big, and it's like this. It's a cutting to a picture of a woman with big boobs and cookies over her,
like
boobs.
An advertisement.
Yeah, and Jamie's like big, and she's like, you know, moving her hands and like, oh my god.
Loomis is like big knockers boobs. What are you trying to say, Jamie?
Tell me what you know.
How big are they? Are we talking C cup, D cup? Jamie, tell me. That could be anyone. Oh, they're okay. They're another brief little shining glimmer of hope in this otherwise boring movie for me. Again, it's attributed to Loomis. When they set the trap, and this is kind of unintentionally hilarious, or maybe intentionally, I don't know. When they set up the trap, it establishes that there's like a million cops outside, and they're doing a very poor job of hiding. Like, they're making all this noise, and basically the man in black has to go and stage like an attack at the asylum to get all the cops away from the house. And I love it because there's a cop that stays behind with Jamie in the room as they lay the trap. And it's so funny because once the cops leave, the cop's just like, all right, we should probably get out of here. But that's when Loomis comes in, and he has one of his bright moments in the movie where he's like, in a very unhinged moment, even for Loomis, he goes,
Charlie, Michael Myers is outside. Stay with the little girl. Please?
Hey, Michael Myers is out there, Charlie. You know what I mean? Like, this is, like, at this moment, again, this would have been the perfect point if the movie had done what I had suggested, where it's like the police cut off Loomis. Like, that would have been the perfect moment if, like, he comes in and is like, we're going to do it my way, Charlie. Like, that could have been so good. Because Pleasance's performance in this moment is so unhinged that I feel like it could have been made so much better if it had this other layer behind it that they didn't do, where it's him like going rogue.
Yeah, I actually completely agree with you. That's a much better story than what we got.
This whole movie should have been Rogue Loomis.
Yeah, like, I'm way on board
Halloween
with 5, that
Rogue Agent.
I'm way on board with that. Yeah, that would have been way cool. But I do think we get the seeds of that. That's what I'm
a little bit. We do, like I said, like brief little glimmers in this movie from here to
I think it's
time.
Really, you know, just probably studio intervention. Like, they just don't have the balls to make a movie like that, you know,
to make him almost like a villain.
Well, yeah, to run with it, like, because that's
well, they had the balls to have the little girl kill the stepmother in the last movie,
I guess. But
you
I
can't have Loomis go crazy.
So this was my hot take, was that, you know, they they couldn't do another Halloween 3, right, where it wasn't about Michael. So, you know, you can't make a movie that steals Michael's limelight. So they
it could have still been the Michael movie, but it could have been like you said, like they could have gone full bore with Loomis as Ahab.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Michael Myers is basically the whale.
Yeah. That's what I see the skeleton of here.
That would have been fun.
Well,
but here's the question, Nick, and I guess unless you had any other thoughts on the movie, like, do you want to kind of get into sort of the summations here?
Yeah, that's fine.
So, but is that enough, would you, you know, to recommend this movie on, like, the bones of what this movie could have been?
This is not a movie I would recommend out of maybe just pure quality.
Out of a marathon context. like, unless you're marathoning all the Halloween movies, I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, this is definitely a curiosity. So we haven't got to our McDonald's ratings, but I think I found the perfect McDonald's rating for Halloween 5 for me.
Okay.
It's the McRib.
Well, see, here's the problem I have with that rating. We came upon that rating for Halloween 3 because a lot of people hate the McRib and a lot of people love it. I would say that ratio doesn't suit this movie because I think a lot more people hate this movie than people love it.
Yeah, well, that's true.
If anything, you know what? I will go with that rating insofar as a little asterisk next to it. Okay, so here's my rating of Halloween 5 on the McDonald's scale. It's a McRib where the store got the order wrong. No, it's the McRib without the pickles.
I asked for
pickles with my McRib, but they didn't do it in this case. I asked for a Captain Ahab subplot with Loomis in this movie, and they didn't do it. So no. it's a movie that got the order wrong.
Okay, no. I got the better McDonald's. I'm leaving this to you to edit this because I got a way better idea. my official McDonald's ranking of Halloween 5 is the ice cream machine, because it's always broken. But if you get
there's the promise chance, but it never works.
If you get the chance to taste the ice cream, which only I have, it's really good.
You only got to, yeah, like there's brief little glimmers, like you got to lick it a little bit, but yeah, that's all. You,
like,
know, you got a few,
like,
licks.
2 days out of the year you'll get ice cream from this machine.
Oh my god. Well, I enjoy that rating. I'm still gonna stick with mine that it's they got my order wrong. You know what I mean? I asked for Ahab and they gave me, I mean, I don't know what. They gave me mulleted Michael Myers. I didn't ask for a mullet. Damn it, take this back. I want my money back. Anyway. Okay, so that's the McDonald's ranking. How would you rank this movie so far with the previous four? Where does this fall in the rankings?
This one would still be after 1 and 3. So this would be my third favorite.
Are you serious?
Well, what else?
Above 2?
I mean, yeah, 2, yeah.
This is above 2 for you.
I mean, they're so it's not, if I had to actually rank them, yes. But yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so you're telling me right now that your rating is 1, 3, 5, 2, and 4?
Yes.
Woo! I gotta assign I'm gonna get my own Dr. Loomis to give you a mental evaluation because that is wild.
Okay. You have to understand. If you want, because I mean, this is not, you're not appreciating, like, the context of this list. Like, this is Halloween in a vacuum kind of thing, like, how much I enjoy. And, I mean, plainly speaking, 2 is just a very okay average movie. It's not – it doesn't matter that the competency of everybody – okay, the crew, the cinematography, all on paper, Halloween 2 is easily a better movie than 5. I would never argue with that. But is Halloween 5 have something more interesting than anything in Halloween 2? Yes, to me.
So, okay, so at the very least, can you concede that Halloween 2, story elements put aside, that it's at least a better made movie?
Yeah, 100%, but that's okay. That's not why I would rank a movie higher.
No, I know. I'm just saying, at the very least, can you concede that it's a better made movie?
Yeah, I would. Okay. I will say, I mean, I'm not going to defend that. That's not something that really I care about too much. So,
how well movies made.
Well, yeah, because why? I mean, is that go see a Star Wars or an Indiana Jones movie or something like that if you want to see those kinds of things. But that's like for me, that's why 3 is so interesting. That's why 5 is interesting because it's doing these different things. I mean, 2 and 4, these are the you know, copies. So I think
the value meal.
Yeah. So
the Walmart menu. Well, it's just. I know this is unfair and I'm dogging on you now, but it's like, I prefer movies with wasted potential. Well, no, I can see where you're coming from. A movie that takes a shot, at least. It may not succeed, but at least it took a shot. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, I guess. I mean, it's not, it's just to me, it's, I don't even think this movie, because I had said earlier, I don't think that the Ahab stuff, Moby Dick stuff that I see is even necessarily intentional. Like, I'm not saying the director actually was running with that and that was his goal. So I don't even think that. I just think that it's there kind of by happy accident, you know. So but it's still interesting to me. And I think, you know, it stands out to me and I really liked it. So if, you know, Loomis keeps appearing, maybe it'll go even further. I don't know. But but for now, this was like, it felt like 4 didn't feel like a Loomis explosion. I mean, it felt like Loomis was being more Loomis. But this is like new Loomis.
Well, regardless of, we may disagree on our thoughts on the movie or you know, overall rating, or whatever. But I love that you enjoyed the movie. That it was, you know, I prefer this version of your rating, that it wasn't a slog, because it was more interesting to talk about. Like, you know, because this could have just been like another Halloween 4, where it's like we don't have too much to say. It's kind of like a, you know, it's a competently made movie, but it's ultimately kind of cookie cutter a little bit.
Yeah.
So I guess I have to be thankful to Halloween 5 for, while I don't think it's a good movie, at least it was bad in the right ways that engendered a good, fun conversation. I didn't think we'd go over an hour talking about this movie. I was honestly thinking, not after we watched the movie, because, you know, you kind of revealed your thoughts after we were done watching it. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a fun conversation. But before we hit play on the movie, when we started watching it, I figured that that you would think this was mediocre and that the conversation would be, we would be lucky to reach a half an hour of talking. But no, it was the opposite. And I guess I should be thankful to old Dominique, whatever his name is, for, you know, taking his shot. I don't think it worked, but it, you know what? Like, decades later, it made for a fun conversation on a podcast.
Okay, yeah, you know what? But this is the thing that you're still not keeping up with. You know, it took a long time for people to come around to Halloween 3. I mean, so...
True.
And, you know, and it makes sense, right? But this one is even more subtle. Like, the brilliance is, you know, even deeper.
It's going to take double the time. So maybe around the year 2050, people will finally start to appreciate Halloween 5.
Maybe not that long. But really, I mean, this is 1989, so let's give it, you know, 30 years. So 2029, 6 years,
whatever time frame you're living in.
Yeah, whatever time, you know, so there's a time that, you know, so anyways, whatever timeline you're living in the future, there's a timeline where Halloween 5 is redeemed and just
cult classic.
Yeah.
So you know, I was about to say, and this might not necessarily be the mark of quality, but this movie does have a 4K release. But I would argue that's only because it's part of a bigger franchise, Halloween. Like, if this movie was on its own, if this wasn't part of the Halloween franchise, would this have gotten a 4K Shout Factory Collector's Edition?
I wonder. Dude, I don't know. Like, okay, there was a time, like maybe a year ago, where that would have been right, but a lot of stuff is getting 4K now, so...
Everything, so, like, straight up garbage.
Yeah, so we're in that time period now where, yes, Halloween 5 is, it can get a 4K standalone release for sure. So, but yeah, I don't think I would recommend this necessarily, as aside from a curiosity and with, if you can latch onto that idea, because if you can't, you know, run with that Moby Dick Loomis idea and just like run with Loomis, and I think there's the other stuff is actually still like on par with 4, at least to me. So I think it's, you know, but more of a curiosity watch, if anything.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't do any of those things because I didn't like this movie. However, I will say that your enthusiasm for the movie has brought it up a little bit in my eyes. Like, you know what I mean? Like I said, it was fun talking about this movie with you, Nick. Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, I appreciate your that you can see the more subtle things that maybe I can't. You know what I mean?
Thank you for being so gracious and generous to me, Dave, and humoring me.
Well, no, I like your takes. You know what I mean? Like, I love your Letterboxd reviews. They're very thorough and extensive and really well thought out.
This might be my hottest take, though, I think.
I think it might be. Out of all the takes you've ever had, this is the hottest one.
Yeah, it's this and GoldenEye.
Yeah. Anywho, all right, well, that's going to do it for The Revenge of Michael Myers. We'll be back next time as we delve into the roots of the Mark of Thorn and all of that crazy shit and the Man in Black with our next installment, Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers. Sheriff, there's another Halloween movie outside.
Look at this. Another Halloween movie. Underneath my glove. We tried to cast it into hell, but hell would not have a Halloween movie.
You think that's funny?
Hey, no, man. No, hey, just a little Halloween prank, okay?
Definitely not funny. Somebody please let me dead right now. Fortunately, we're lousy cops. Sorry.